Morning, family. My name is Carrie. I'm an addict. Forgive me a second. I get a little emotional because my first convention was probably 8 or 9 years ago, Diversity is Our Strength. And when I first went to that, I used to like look at the workshop speakers and the main speakers, and I was just like, oh my God, those people are so cool. Like, those people have their shit together. They are just beyond like my wildest imagination of, you know, I just didn't want to get high anymore. I didn't want to use anymore. I didn't want to live that way anymore. A lot of times when I meet people and they see me now, like especially at my job or when I go to like an H&I commitment or anything like that, I always get that you don't look like an addict. You don't look like you used to use drugs. You don't look like any of those things. And I was like, well, first of all, when I got here, I did not look like this. I've been fed well over the last few years, and I've stopped smoking cigarettes at one point, and that just made me eat more. And I didn't look like this. I had dark circles under my eyes, and I was very thin, and I was like ribs poking out, and jail jumpsuits, things like that. You know, like I didn't, and because I wore one at one point. I promised I wouldn't get caught up in my drug-a-log, but I do need to qualify myself for my seat here. You know, grew up middle class in this little town called Middletown in Maryland, which is outside of Frederick. You know, father was an alcoholic, mother was an enabler, and that's what I saw. So I got the best of both worlds. I got to see my dad solve all his problems by drinking. I got to see my mother solve all her problems by making sure my dad was happy no matter how unhappy she was. And then I got my dad blaming me for why my mom was so unhappy all the time. And I'm an only child, so anytime anything ever happened, I was a straight-A student. I participated in marching band, and I did all these things, but every time my mom would walk out of the house crying, Carrie, would you look what you have done to your mother? So everything was always my fault. No matter what it was, I wasn't good enough, I wasn't strong enough, I wasn't pretty enough, I wasn't thin enough. I wasn't anything enough. So I just did what I was supposed to do in my life. I went to school. I got good grades. I went to college. I graduated. I married my high school sweetheart. We bought a house. Then I couldn't get pregnant. Now I'm broken as a woman on top of all the other failures in my life. So my husband and I split up. I met this wonderful man who told me how pretty I was and told me how beautiful I was, and he took me to McDonald's and bought me dinner. And he paid for my cigarettes, and he put gas in my car, and he worked at a bar in downtown Frederick, and he would make me special food. So, you know, it was real easy when I left my husband. It was real easy for me to jump into that relationship. And it was real easy to walk away from my 9-to-5 job, and it was real easy for me to fall into a lifestyle of fast action and being in an environment full of people that partied all the time and didn't care that they just didn't care what I looked like. I was beautiful to them, or so they said. And it was real easy for me to just soak all that in. Very short period of time. Just over the course of several years, I wound up, Frederick's a small town, everybody knows everybody, in recovery and in the drug scene, and it got hot, so I did what any good addict would do, along with that wonderful man, oh mine, and I robbed my parents blind, and we moved to get away from the drug scene in Frederick, and we took off, and we moved to the best place for any crackhead to go. We moved to West Palm Beach, Florida, because that's where we were going to go to get away from everything. Things got worse. That man that I was so madly in love with tried to sell me for 50 rock and then proceeded to whoop my ass when I refused. I'll never forget that first beating. The rest of them kind of were a blur after that, but the first time, and I don't remember what the I don't remember what the physical felt like. I don't remember the actual blows. I do remember him sitting on my chest and the weight, and I remember begging him to kill me because I wanted to die rather than face life without him. He had been cheating, lying, stealing, running around, all of those things that we do. I mean, my addiction just, he was already well into his when he found me, and he just grabbed me and was just like, let's go. And I was like, all in, because I wanted to fit in. Lie to me, cheat on me, beat on me, steal from me, whatever you do, don't fucking leave. And I took that for years. I took it for years. I had a moment of clarity at some point while I was down there. My life did not change then, but it started to, because one night after a particularly rough night, I called my parents crying and told them what had happened, and they left their house at midnight and drove 16 hours straight through to come and get me. By the time they got there, I didn't want to leave. I told them I wasn't going anywhere unless they brought him too, and that story I had just told about getting my ass beat was a lie because I was drunk and didn't know what I was talking about. Ended up back in Frederick. Things did not get better. They got worse. At the end of my road, that was about a year, maybe not even a year after I got back to Frederick, at the end of my road, I found myself in a seedy-ass motel on the outskirts of Frederick County, watching roaches crawl away with my shit, sitting on the floor, rocking, couldn't get high enough or drunk enough. There was no amount of anything in this world that was making me feel any better about where I had gone, what I had done, the things that I had been through, the things I had put my family through. And I had a hearing for a violation of probation that morning, the next morning, and I left that hotel and I got pulled over. Probably the first conscious contact with the God of my understanding, because I swore I was leaving and I was going home because I was going to court. Who thinks after I got the liquor I was actually going to court? So I got pulled over before I ever got to the liquor store, and they had to call my mom to come pick me up because, as it turns out, I was driving on a suspended license, so they arrested me. I was going nowhere. My father had pressed charges against me some months before that for stealing from him. I had a license to write checks out of his bank account. And that's what I finally ended up getting hemmed up with, was bank fraud, check fraud charges. Nobody knew how serious that was. Like, federal government doesn't like it when you sign checks that aren't yours. They don't like that. So my dad had me arrested, and he tried to drop the charges, but the state picked them up. So there was no out. My lawyer got me off over and over again. I kept violating probation. I kept showing up at my PO's office drunk. I kept showing up when I showed up. I would sit in the courthouse parking lot and do one before I went in because, look, I mean, seriously, I'm not going to jail. I'm not going to jail. Nobody's going to lock me up. So I go into the courthouse for my VOP, and my public defender looks at me and he says, you know you're going to jail today, right? And I was like, no, I'm not. You're going to get me a continuance because that's what you do. And he's like, I'll ask, but you're going to jail today. And I was like, no, I'm not. My mom was there. She had brought me to the courthouse. My mom, who had come to Florida to pick me up. My mom, who had driven. My mom, who never locked me out of the house. My mom, who never, like, turned her back on me no matter how many times I took her purse. I would, like, throw her wallet out in the middle of the driveway to make her think she dropped it on the way in the house one night. Because, you know, in my world, if I made her think that she lost something or that she did something, that she wouldn't know that I was the one taking her shit. Stood in front of the judge, asked for my continuance. The judge said, we'll grant you the continuance for 30 days, but we're revoking your bond. And I looked at my lawyer, and he said to me, I asked him what that meant, and he goes, it means you're going to jail today. And I was like, I had an L.A. law moment, and for my friends from Frederick, because really this was like my shining moment, standing in front of the judge, looking crazy, stinking like nobody's business. And I looked at my public defender, and in front of God and everybody, you're fired! Because in my world, if I didn't have a lawyer, and I literally looked at the judge and I said, I don't have a lawyer, you can't touch me today. Well, let me tell you what they did. Handcuffs, ankle shackles, and out the back door I went, and I will never forget the look on my mother's face, the horror on her face, and watching me being dragged out the courtroom like a crazy person. And they held me in county jail on no bond, and I went for my 30-day hearing, and they said, no, I don't think so, and they sent me back, and they continued me again. 30 days came, and they continued me again, and I'm like watching people come into county jail, and they're coming and going, and I'm doing this recovery program while I'm in there. This Project 103 is what they call it in Frederick County. And I'm just telling these people what I think they want to hear, because I need to pass this program before they'll even consider releasing me. Just telling them what they wanted to hear, because you see, that wonderful man was locked up at the same time I was. He got locked up 2 weeks before I did. So we were in jail together, and he was writing me letters, sending me stuff in the mail, and I was so in love. And it was so romantic because we were locked up together. I was so sick. I finally got out 6 months later. I was in a court, long-term court program, court-ordered program. They told me they didn't want me in the program. Somebody saw fit to give me a chance. They said, well, you have to do this, 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 and this to stay in the program, and you have to graduate or you're going to get all your backup. And it was some good amount of time attached to that. First thing they told me I had to do was go to 90 and 90 and 90. I didn't know nothing about no NA. I had been to an AA meeting when I was in college because I had to go for a school project. I had to go monitor and observe the behavior. And because my major was in psychology, I got my degree in psych because I was too smart to let drugs take. I was too smart for that. And I remember sitting in that AA meeting. God bless the other fellowship for starting us, first of all. Thinking that I never wanted to be like those poor people. And 10 years later, I was like a million times worse than any of those people I had met that day. But I went to my first meeting in Frederick. And I went to my next meeting in Frederick, and the court program that I was in ordered a restraining order between me and the man that I was still madly in love with. And I like threw a fit in the courthouse, and one of my friends that was also in the program had to drag me out of the courthouse when they issued that restraining order so I didn't get arrested again because I wasn't having it. But I was like, I'm working the system. You can't keep him from going to NA meetings too. So if we see each other there, you can't stop us. And they're like, you're right, we can't. But he didn't come to as many as I wanted him to. And then he got mad because he said the only reason the guys in the program were friends with him was because they wanted me. And I started to kind of like that idea. I started hanging out with some of y'all. And I started to hear some of what was going on. And quite frankly, I thought you were full of shit. I didn't believe anybody was actually clean. I wanted someone to teach me how to smoke crack on Friday so I didn't waste all my paycheck by Saturday. Or figure out how I could go out to the bars and drink half the night and not do the other stuff. Nobody told me how to do that. Nobody came up in here and told me how that worked. I did my 90 and 90. And then I think I did like 180 and 180. And then I think I did like, I don't know, I just kept going. I kept going because the more you guys told me the truth, the less I believed the lies. The more truth I was hearing when I was going to the NA meetings, all the lies that man was telling me, they were lies. And it didn't take long before, because you see, he would call me in the middle of the night and demand that I come pick him up or he would kill himself. Now, doing that violated leaving the county, leaving the state, seeing him at all. But I was willing to do that because I felt so guilty for all the things I had ever done wrong in my life, and I didn't want that on my life either. So about 15 months in, I was doing this thing, and I was kind of like just kind of doing the thing. Had a sponsor in the other fellowship. Love her to pieces, but she just did not get where I was coming from. 15 months in, I relapsed. 15 months in, I thought I could go to the bar and have a drink and be normal. And 2 days after that, I came back to a meeting and I picked up a white key tag. Now, mind you, when I would go to those meetings, my first couple of meetings, I would sit in the front of the room. And I didn't sit in the front of the room because I was getting a better message up there. I was sitting in front of the room because I could get up and sashay my hot little ass and my tight jeans over to the coffee machine. and get the coffee, and I was doing it because everybody was watching, because it was all about, like, I just didn't feel good on the inside. I needed to feel good on the outside, and I was getting validation that way. Because there were men in the program who were really good friends to me, and there were men in the program that were more than happy to validate me. Thank you guys who were my friends. Thank you to the guys who were my friends. And thank you to the guys who were happy to validate me, because you taught me something too. Came back, sat all the way in the back of the room, because I was ashamed that I had 15 months without using anything, and within 2 hours one night, I went from drinking a glass of wine to killing a bottle of tequila and calling my crack dealer and emptying my entire bank account. And I drove from one end of Frederick to the other with the rock in my bra, and I was sick on my stomach from all the alcohol I had already drank, and I was throwing up in a cup in my car driving down the road, and I didn't want to pull over, and it had nothing to do with my fear of the police, and everything to do with the longer it took me to get back to my apartment, the longer it was going to take for me to get that one in me. How did I not kill somebody that night? How did I not kill myself that night, or catch another charge and get kicked out of this program? The court-ordered program, not this program, because y'all ain't ever going to kick me out. And I sat in the back of the room that night at that meeting, and one by one, the women in that room started getting up and coming back, and they sat with me on the floor in that meeting. And they encouraged me to get my white key tag. And a week later, I found out my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 renal cell carcinoma. And I told my mom I had relapsed, and she's like, I don't know why you're so sorry to me. She's like, you're the only one you're hurting. And I stayed clean for 6 months while she was ill. I got to be there by my mom's bedside. I got to be there and sit there and hold her hand and tell her that she could go home now because I was going to be okay. And then I got drunk after she passed away, and I lied about that shit. But nobody at the meetings, I lied about it, because by then I was like, everybody's like, you got through all this stuff and blah, blah. And it was all about saving my face. I didn't know anything about saving my ass at that point, and I still didn't feel real good about me on the inside. I had gotten my driver's license back. I had gotten in a little apartment. I had gone back to school. I started getting a few things. So, yeah, I'm going through this process. My mom had passed away, and there were more people at her funeral from recovery that didn't know her, but they knew me. Time went on. I got the better job. I stayed clean. I got involved in service. I started working some steps. I'm sorry, I have no idea how much time I have left. I need to get to the point of... So the gifts I've already gotten, I got my license back, I got a job, I got to school, I got to the irreplaceable knowledge that I could sit with my mom while she was sick, that I wasn't trying to sell her pain meds on the side because I really wanted to. All of these things. And I got honest about the fact that I had used after my mom died right when I was getting ready to celebrate 3 years clean. Because the knowledge that I had done that one thing, and I was area chair at the time, and I was on like host convention committees, and I was doing all, and I was terrified that if I told the truth, that I was going to get kicked out, that they were going to make me give up my service commitments. I had relapsed that one night. I had been clean since then, and I had started working some steps. But like I said, that knowledge, I was in the car on the way to a speaker jam with my best friend, and I was like, I need to talk to you. And she was going through some shit, too, so she spent the next hour and a half in the car telling me all about her shit. And we're like 10 minutes away from the speaker jam, and she looks at me, and she's like, wait, didn't you have something you want to talk to me about? I almost said no. I almost said no, but I knew at that moment that I would rather drink and pick up a white key tag than tell the truth. And I just looked at her in the car, and I'm driving, and I looked at her in the car, and I was just like, I'm not as clean as everybody thinks I am. And she's like, what? Like the scene, I think she thought maybe I was high then. I'm not sure. But I got honest about it, y'all. I got honest. I'd been working some steps. The fourth step was kicking my ass with that guilt thing, and then the fifth step was coming, and I knew I had to tell the truth. So that just, like, I'll be honest with you, that like shot me forward in my recovery. That admission, I had just let go of everything. So in the last couple of years, I was working at a diner, and I had gone to school, and I was handing out resumes, but I had a felony record at that point. No one wanted to hire me for anything because I had a felony record. And I sat there, and I started going to job interviews, and everybody was like, you know, you're great, but we would love to hire you, but HR said. And I finally, after about a month and a half of that, I got real. I was like, you know what? Okay, I have this little apartment. I've been clean for a little bit. I've got a job. I can pay my bills. I'm off of food stamps. I'm like, you know, I'm doing my thing. So if this is all there is, okay. And then like 2 days later, somebody came into that diner and sat down at my table, and we started talking about football. And we both rooted for the same team. And she's like, you should come apply to work at my job. And I was like, that sounds great. And she's like, well, I had been going to school for medical billing and coding. And she was like, I'm an office manager for a billing company for an anesthesiologist in Loudoun County. And then I sent her my resume, and she sent me back, and she's like, can you come down for an interview on Thursday? Thursday was the only day of the week I had off. I didn't want to go. So I didn't want to set myself up for failure again. But everybody in the rooms, all my network were like, no, you go. You go on that interview. And I was just like, why do I want to do this to myself again? I went on my interview. She said, we're going to run a background check. And I just spilled it all. And she hired me on the spot. Said she'd give me a chance. That job closed down. She got me another job. I've been at that job for 5.5 years. I just got promoted to management. My felony record has been expunged. Like, not pardoned, none of that shit. Like, I went back in front of the same judge that locked my ass up that day. The one that I tried to show my ass in front of and fire my public defender. That same judge expunged my entire record a couple of years ago. I could do none of that, without this. I mean, you want to talk about gifts. I got to the point in my life at one point. So I've gone, like, the car, I've been able to purchase a home, the job, all of those things. And they're all things that could go up in a heartbeat. I watched my sponsor's house burn down some years ago, and she lost everything. And the way she carried herself through that told me that all of those things that I have right now, all of those extra things I have right now, are just that, they're things. But by being in this program and by being able to be there with my mother, I got to a point where I was sitting in a meeting one night, and I told you about the hot ass stuff and the coffee and all that stuff. None of that changed after the relapse. I just tried to be a little more discreet. But I started to feel some kind of way about myself. I started to feel just not good. And I was sitting in a meeting one day, it was my home group one night, and I was like crying. I was like, why do I feel like shit? Why do I still feel this way? Why do I have all these good things going on? And I feel like I'm never good enough to be anybody's girlfriend. I'm always good enough to be on the side, but I'm not good enough for anything more than that. And it occurred to me in that meeting while I was sharing about it, which is the miracle of sharing your pain in a meeting, it occurred to me at that moment that I was feeling that way because I was allowing it to happen. I was like, I feel like this because I keep doing it. I keep participating in the behavior. I keep running around with men I shouldn't be running around with. I keep accepting sex in place of love. I keep accepting all of these things. I didn't stop right then. I'm working some steps now. I'm working some steps, and I talked to my sponsor, and I did not stop then. But it was a process of turning it over. It was a process of praying for strength, of praying for help, and asking y'all and constantly telling everybody where I was at. And I finally made a decision that I needed to do another 90 and 90, but in a different way. Like, I needed to, like, just stop the behavior. So all along this process, now I've not only got some material things, but I got to a point in my life where I was okay with Carrie. I was feeling strong on the inside. My friends were trusting me. My job trusts in me. Got all of, you know, these are things that cannot be taken away. They can't. I found the freedom. I found the freedom from active addiction. The rest of that stuff, no one can take from me. And I realized along that journey, you know, it is the steps. It is a step program to get to that place. So we admitted we screwed up. We started to believe in something bigger. We decided to try and let somebody else help us through it. We wrote it all down. We got honest about it. We realized we were still a little fucked up. We asked for more help than what we were able to get at that point. We started to try and figure out who we had hurt and fix it. We went through every day trying to make sure that we didn't fuck up again. We prayed. We meditated. We moved forward to carry a message to the rest of the world, the hope that any addict can seek recovery, that any addict can find a new way to live, the promise of freedom from active addiction, and my biggest gift of all is you guys. Thank you for letting me share.